It's Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. We're Reefer Madness, the podcast.
Reefer Madness, you've got two stories to tell me.
I do, but before we do that, I'm Trevor Schiefeld, the pharmacist.
Still. Well, I was worried about you. I'm Kirk Nyquist. I'm the nurse.
So, Kirk, I've been talking to some interesting people. We've got Kylie Beaudry.
Okay.
She's in Alberta. And she does a bunch of cannabis-related stuff, but we have her there to talk. I can't even say it without giggling. We're talking about cannabis and sex.
You know, you're telling me about this. I was up north. I didn't have time to listen to the interview yet.
I think you'll really like this one.
Well, you're not giving me a chance to listen to it.
Well, yeah, how about we'll let Renee play this one for you.
Okay, so I'm going to listen in. So tell me what should we expect from this?
She's very knowledgeable, very, very clinical. Now, she'll be the first to say she's not a official clinician, but she's got lots of personal experience and she's sort of gone around to, you know, Tupperware parties, but for people interested in using cannabis to help with some sexual issues.
Okay. So you want me to picture a Tupperware party without the Tupperware? And does she see couples?
It sounds like she mostly talks to women.
Groups of women?
It can be groups and individually. Like I said, she's got lots of lived experience and lots of reading behind her. Like she's very, very careful with what she says, that she's doesn't go into hyperbole at all.
Okay. Well, I'm intrigued.
Let's listen. Very good.
Well, hi. I'm a mom of three. I've got three kids, and I've been kind of working in the cannabis industry for the past year and a half. Started it with cannabis when I was kind of in high school as recreation. I mean, I think a lot of people kind of started out that way. And just over the years, got more and more interested in the medical side. Treating family members with cannabis has something that really piqued our interest, and just learning more and more every day about it.
So a couple things that we've thrown emails back and forth. So a couple interesting things on the medical end of things. Your oldest child has cystic fibrosis. Were you using cannabis at all with the child with cystic fibrosis?
Yes, I do. She's currently on a low dose of CBD oil. I took her into a specialized cannabinoid clinic, and I just basically wanted to... I've done a lot of research, not just on cannabis, but I've done a lot of research on CF. I've spoken to a lot of adult cystic fibrosis patients that consume cannabis to help with some of their treatments, and they find a big reduction in the inflammation in the lungs. So we're basically using it as a preventative treatment to help with that. She is on a lot of inhaled antibiotics to treat some different bacterial strains that they've been finding, that with CF patients basically get these bacterial films in their lungs, and it creates a breeding ground for bacteria, which then causes a ton of inflammation. And so I've been treating her with CBD for that, and also to help with anxiety levels, especially surrounding hospital stays. She's only 8 years old, and it takes us about 2 or 3 months to kind of get her down from those high anxiety levels after she's had a hospital stay. And we've found great success, with treating her like that.
No, that's really good. One of the groups I volunteer with is the Kinsman Club of Dauphin. So Kinsman Canada has been raising money for CF research for a bunch of years now. And sort of through my professional work as a pharmacist, I've run into a few families with CF. It's on the plus side, you know, it's a disease that kids didn't usually get out of childhood, and now they're getting into their 20s and 30s, but it's still something we certainly don't have a cure for. So I'm really glad that CBD is helping her with, you know, the anxiety and maybe some of the breathing problems. The other interesting, not that your whole family is not interesting, but you had some stuff with cannabis, and I think it was your father-in-law. Tell us a little bit about him.
So he about, I think it was 2012, 2013, he woke up blind one morning, just out of the blue, just hit him like a freight train, and took him down to the hospital, and they did a CAT scan and discovered that he had four tumors. Once they did, they removed some of them, and it was glioblastoma, which is pretty severe. It's a difficult to treat brain tumor, and they're difficult. It's difficult to remove them. They were able to take out two of the bigger ones, but they were afraid to work on the other two. So then we went through rounds of radiation and chemotherapy with him. And at that time, when we approached his oncologist regarding cannabis, and you know, we had done a lot of reading about, you know, the anti-tumor effects and whatnot. And his oncologist basically said to us, "If you want to do cannabis treatment, then find yourself a new oncologist," which was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, that'd be crushing.
So instead of doing that, we just did it under the table, undercover. we obtained, you know, a few pounds of cannabis, as high quality as you could kind of get on the street. And we started making Rick Simpson's oil. And I mean, we were just following what we could find on the internet and talking to other people that had treated their parents or another family member. And, you know, there's not a day that goes by that I wish I had known what I know now, you know, just on how to make better products, you know, and different remedies. I guess you could call them remedies. But so we basically just treated him. We used to just take the oil and put it kind of under his tongue and around his so he'd get that absorption in his mouth. And we used to treat him. We didn't tell any of the nurses this is what we were doing, but we'd have to sneak in there and give him his dose. And, you know, what it really helped with it, he was already in palliative care by the time we'd even started cannabis treatment with him. So it really, the anti-tumor effects, I think, it was more to help him with his quality of life. You know, it helped with appetite, helped him sleep, and definitely for pain reduction. As he got closer to the end of life, you know, there was a lot of morphine and it just enough to keep him comfortable. And so cannabis really kind of helped in that way, and just, you know, making sure that his exit out was more comfortable and he wasn't suffering as much.
Well, that's a bit of a harrowing story, but and not that those aren't, again, both really interesting. You've got so many things that was going to run out of time, but what I really want to talk to you about is a bit of a left turn from both of those, because you've talked and written and read about a topic that we haven't dealt with here yet, and some people might be a little surprised. You have an interest in cannabis and sexual health, especially female sexual health. How did you get interested in that, and what have you sort of discovered?
Well, I mean, I think as a lot of things happen, a lot of these things kind of happen by accident, but you start getting, you know, I'm sure you get this a lot. You get family members and friends like, oh, you know, I have this friend who's got anxiety and wants help with this. And so I started, as I did all my research and started to learn more and more about cannabis and health effects and things, I actually just started hosting small educational sessions, mainly with women. You know, I'd come into somebody's home. I'd talk to them about their endocannabinoid system. And as I started doing this, more and more women were coming up with, you know, oh my gosh, I'm having these hot flashes, and or I'm having a lot of pain when I'm having my period. And I started, of course, looking more into that and looking at for studies and discovering that there's not a lot out there except for all of this anecdotal evidence. Like there's so many stories of women using and consuming cannabis as a self-care treatment to help deal with some of the unique physical issues that women have, such as menstruation, you know, birth, after birth, even pre-birth, menopause, endometriosis. I mean, these are unique challenges that women have, and there are lots and lots of studies out there, but we're not really looking at them as these are our issues and that cannabis could be a treatment. In 2017, the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine put out the health effects of cannabis and cannabinoids to identify the gaps, what we need to research, and not one was listed with regards to women's health or men's health or sexual dysfunction or helping with acute menopause symptoms. So we've identified all these other gaps, such as anxiety and cancer treatments and epilepsy. And I think, you know, I just really want to kind of bring the awareness that it can treat so much more.
That's a huge topic. Like everything else. So we'll just quickly say, in case it wasn't clear, you're not a medical professional, but you have been doing a lot of reading, a lot of talking, and have sort of a lot of anecdotal evidence to bring to people, which I think is very valuable. And I know our friends over at Strain Print are involved in a trial right now with some researchers out of Israel on endometriosis. So we're hoping
endometriosis. I'm following that study.
So, but how about for something that I'm not that endometriosis isn't common, but nearly everybody, if once they get to a certain age, goes through perimenopause and menopause. What sort of things have you found about, we'll start with hot flashes. Is cannabis helpful at all for those kind of symptoms?
I've had women that started using a regime of CBD and as well as using different teas. There was a company that started making sort of an herbal tea with using cannabis, and I've had women use that tea and there's one woman in particular, she would get hot flashes, you know, 3 to 4 nights a week. She'd drink this tea on a Sunday evening, and then she wouldn't really consume anything else during the week. And she said, just that one cup of tea on a Sunday evening just kind of helped me throughout the week, and then I'd have another one the next Sunday. And just even relieving, when a woman hits menopause, there's a lot of emotional aspects that happen. There's anxiety. A lot of stress involved with it because your body's kind of going, it's shutting down a system and it can be painful. You experience a lot of things like vaginal dryness, which can definitely then create that's a physical symptom that can then create an emotional issue when it comes to being in the bedroom or just in general and how you're feeling about yourself. So I feel like cannabis is actually used to help with some of the psychological symptoms of menopause. I think it does help physical. I can't say for sure because, again, it's not studied. There's no real evidence out there that says that this is happening, and that's where I'm promoting that some of these research institutes start looking more into that. There's a huge drive right now to find drugs that help with female sexual dysfunction. There's 6 on the market right now for male dysfunction, but none for them. Only one just got approved, and it will be available in September for female. And it's for a very specific disorder, the hypoactive sexual disorder, or HSDD. That is called Vyleesi. That'll come out in September. That'll be one of the first of its kind to help with the physiological symptoms. But I think really where cannabis is going to help is in relieving the anxiety and the stress. And now we've got a really interesting opportunity coming up when topicals come on board in October. And there are, sexual lubricants that are coming out that are infused with THC and CBD, suppositories that can help with pain relief or vaginal dryness. So there's a lot of these products that are on the market right now in the illicit market that will hopefully be coming on board here in October. And we'll have an opportunity to study those.
And I agree. And as a pharmacist who compounds, I've made all sorts of, with varying degrees of success, topical creams for, like you said, everything from vaginal dryness to, you know, we've even done things like put Viagra into a cream to see if it helped things with things like clitoral engorgement and with varying degrees of success. tell me about, have you talked to anyone who've used any of these sort of topical THC or other cannabinoid creams for sexual dysfunction and if it worked well for them?
Absolutely. I personally have used them after having three children. There's a lot of healing that's got to happen down there. And after having children, you know, it can take 3 months and it can take over a year for a woman to really kind of bounce back and not have pain during sex. And I personally have found great success with using a THC-infused lubricant. And I do have a lot of friends. I've compounded them myself, you know, just making them out of different oils and stuff and using them that way. I found products on the market. Other women have used them and, you know, they're like, it's like night and day. Because THC is a vasodilator. It does help bring the blood to the surface. And that's usually one of the issues when a woman is trying to be or trying to get aroused, is increasing that blood flow. And that also helps with the elasticity. So it's not just for sexual dysfunction. That helps with those menopausal symptoms when you need to bring that blood flow and help with the elasticity. And there's definitely been, like I said, a lot of anecdotal evidence that it does work. And then there's even just consuming it mindfully to help relax the body and help relax the muscles. Because it's also, you know, when you have that vaginal dryness or tightness down there, especially after childbirth, having something that can relax the muscles down there and also relax your body, relax your mind, really helps with boosting the chance of getting aroused. You know, it involves a lot of foreplay and those types of things, but this is just kind of a little boost, just kind of boosts it up a little bit.
I'm going to jump in real quick.
You absolutely.
Because I know someone's going to ask either now or later. So THC in the lubricant, vaginally is, you know, in pharmacy world is a fantastic way to absorb stuff into the rest of the body. So someone's going to ask me eventually, do people get high off of using a THC infused lubricant? Do we think it's just a local effect or do you sort of feel something in the rest of the body? Have you noticed or has any of the people you've talked to noticed?
That is a really great question. I myself have never gotten high from a topical. I have talked to people who feel like they got high or they feel like they got a little, like, a little tingly or a little buzz. I did find a study last year that basically ruled out that cannabinoids don't absorb into the bloodstream topically. And that's why using suppositories, there's been evidence using suppositories, especially in children, high dose. You know, you've got suppositories that are in upwards of 500 milligrams of THC to help treat some cancer symptoms. And they're using them on kids because it doesn't do that first pass through the liver. It's basically a topical. Anything you use rectally or vaginally is actually a topical. It's not an ingestible. So it doesn't do that first pass through the liver. However, I will warn that if you use a THC lubricant and your partner then performs oral sex, they will get high. So it's something to be aware of, especially when you've got women in menopause and their husband has a heart condition or anything like that. It's something to be aware of that if you do ingest it in that way, you just need to be aware of that. The other thing is that a lot of the products on the market are infused in an oil. They're not water-based solutions. And so especially in high-risk populations or, if you're concerned about sexually transmitted infections or worried about becoming pregnant, is that these oil-based lubricants do not play nice with latex.
Well, that's important.
You have to be very aware.
Yeah, that's very important to mention. We go over that in a lot in the pharmacy. Make sure you use water-based lubricants. So this is not one of those.
Yeah, so you want to make sure that you're using a polyurethane condom. If you're worried about getting pregnant, then use other forms of contraception. But yeah, oils do not play nice with latex. And I'm interested to see the type of formulations that are going to come out with nanoparticle technology and with using isolates and being able to suspend cannabinoids in a water-based solution that would alleviate that issue. You know, it's going to come for sure. And the other thing is that cannabis lubricants. I don't know about you, but I feel like I want to go buy a lubricant. I want to go to my local drugstore where I buy all my other sexual health products. I don't want to walk into a dispensary and talk to a bud tender. I don't know how anybody else feels about that.
And
that's something that...
So happy you're mentioning that.
Because, I mean, we have such a big opportunity right now with this consultation on potential market for cannabis health products with Health Canada. We have right now until September 3rd to give our opinions, and I invite all Canadians to go online and fill out that form. If you've ever used a cannabis product for any of these types of issues, let Health Canada know, because that's where these research studies are going to come from. That's where the research funding that are going to be put into. But we have to let them know. And so all Canadians, not just medical professionals or people in the cannabis industry, just everyday Canadians can go on the Health Canada website right now and they can go to that consultation. I'm sure you guys have probably posted it in some of your content on your page.
We'll make sure we post it. We'll make sure we post it on this one for sure. And yeah, I'll do my usual rant. Of course, these things should go through pharmacies. I'm not taking anything away from the dispensary, but yeah, people are comfortable talking. Yeah, people are comfortable talking to their pharmacist about. Frankly, we talk about sexual dysfunction relatively often. You know, as people get older, you know, men and women over 50, it's pretty common. So why wouldn't you talk to the pharmacist about it?
Absolutely. And when you go to a pharmacy now, I mean, gosh, the amount of sexual products, like sexual health products, I mean, there's almost an aisle now, right on down to specific devices that can be used during sex and to help stimulate the vulva and the clitoris. And so I think, you know, this is that's the place for these types of products, not walking into a cannabis retail store to buy these products, which is that's the place that they're going to be available right now. Let's be honest, that is where Canadians are going to be able to get them. And that's kind of what the service that I provide for women is saying, you know, it would be awesome that if it wasn't a pharmacy, but this is where you can get them. You know, this is where I hope to see them in the future, but you'll be able to get them right now. And the thing is, you can actually take your legal oils that you get right now. So, I mean, if you buy a cannabis oil from a retail store, or even if you buy it from a medical, you know, you get a prescription and you get a medical, you can use that topically. You can actually mix that with even just an almond oil or an avocado oil and use that as well as sort of a something in the meantime, and people don't realize that that they can do that. And I talk a lot about that in the education sessions that I give.
Oh, so many good topics. Because Kirk will tease me if I don't mention suppositories more. It seemed to come up every episode. We talked a little bit about the lubricants, suppositories, especially dealing with the sort of the sexual health end of things. When do they come in handy? What are they? When are people talking about using, and I'm assuming we're talking about a vaginal suppository, right?
Well, for a vaginal suppository, they come in, you know, when you're about to get your period. Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, every month we build up this endometrial tissue, and then we slough it off every single month. And it's not a pleasant experience to go through. Some women are lucky enough that they don't get cramping, but it's no different than uterine contractions after you've had a baby. When your body basically cuts off the blood supply to this tissue and basically kills it off, I mean, that doesn't sound that pleasant. And some women have debilitating pain when it comes to this. I mean, it's being talked about more that maybe women should be given a couple more health days, you know, to allow themselves to get back to work and things like that. So, and doctors are starting to confirm that some of these contractions can be similar in the pain level as a heart attack.
Oh my.
So, you know, if you're going through this on a monthly basis, where you're having debilitating pain and you're popping ibuprofen and Tylenol or, you know, even stronger pain relief medications, these suppositories are localized and they get right to even just rubbing a topical on your lower abdomen to help. Maybe it's a psychological thing, but I firmly believe that it does relieve that pain. A lot of women consume cannabis for pain, you know, whether it's vaping or smoking or ingestibles. But for the suppositories, the nice thing about it is that you can do a much higher dose and not get high. So you can still use THC and be able to go to work. You can play with your kids. You can drive. You can function. Now, I don't want to say that for everybody because there's not enough studies on it. I don't want you to go and take a 250 milligram THC suppository and then go try to drive to work. I mean, it's something that you should test out and see how your body reacts to it before you do anything like that. I'm always erring on the side of caution, but that is the great thing about using a suppository is that it's localized, it gets right to the source, and you don't have the same psychoactive effects that you do from ingestibles.
Thank you. Again, very, very well thought out and well researched. Anything else that we should sort of talk about on the sort of the sexual health end of cannabis, or frankly, if you've got any sort of favorite rabbit holes you want to go down cannabis related, go right ahead.
Well, I mean, if we even just look at the names of the endocannabinoids that we produce in our body, like anandamide, the root of that word is Sanskrit for joy and bliss. It's thought right now, and again, just need more evidence, we need more research, that women actually have more CB1 and CB2 receptors than their male counterparts. And a lot of those are focused in the reproductive system. Again, that's there's room for study, but even when you look at the amount of nerve endings that are attached to the clitoris, I mean, you know, the male penis is on the outside, the women, you know, our uterus is on the inside, but even where the clitoris is so small, there's thousands and thousands of neurological receptors there, and they get way more sensitive during hormonal fluctuations. Even cannabis can affect us different ways if we're in a different part of our cycle. So, you know, if you're coming up on your period or you're ending your period, cannabis may affect you differently in your mood. And a lot of other pharmaceutical drugs can affect you differently as well. For any woman that's ever went and got a bikini wax, the difference between how it feels if you're on your period or if you're not on your period is substantially different. Your pain level tolerance is way down when you're in that period part of, in the menstruation part of your cycle. So, you know, there's so much room for research and using this, you know, and learning more about how this amazing plant can help us kind of balance, you know, that's what the endocannabinoid system is about. It's all about balancing and bringing homeostasis to the body, and sexual health is a big part of that, not just for sex, but just for health in general. So that's I just want people to be more aware about that and using cannabis mindfully, not just for self-care, but for helping their sexual well-being.
Kylie, this was fascinating, and I feel we could keep talking about this and some of the other stuff you've been reading for hours and hours, but we are running a little short on time. Before I forget to ask about it, your company is called Parkland Flower Inc. What do you guys do?
We are an applicant for cannabis cultivation. We're going to be a micro cultivation facility. We are specifically looking to breed and search out cultivars that are specific for topical use and for helping with different things that we've discussed here. We are on the recreational side. Unfortunately, I don't have the millions of dollars to get us on the medical side. But you never know, we'll get scooped up by a big company that wants to study more of that. And that's kind of our goal with that. We just want to help people. We grow for a couple of medical patients as well under ACMPR licenses and help the community that way. And that's kind of our vision is to just bring love and light and a great quality cannabis to people who need it.
Kylie, this has been a fantastic and fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for your time. I got the feeling we may touch base with you more down the road when we have more questions. Thank you very much.
I would absolutely love that. And this was a pleasure. Great questions. I have to say, I love your podcast and I'm a user of Strain Print. I have it on two different apps, one for myself and one for my daughter. And so I'm excited to see the amount of research and the data that they're going to provide. And it'll be very interesting down the road. I would very much welcome having any other conversations about this topic or any other topic. Thank you so much, Trevor.
So, Kirk, how'd you like Kylie Boudreaux?
Well, I'm a visual kind of guy. I thought that was good. I interesting about how people use their medicine.
Yes. And you like the part where I was a little flabbergasted by it makes perfect sense. But yes, again, a 13-year-old boy came out. So if you use a cannabis oil vaginally or more specifically on the clitoris, you're not, according to Kylie, and actually this is going to come up a little bit more in our next interview, you're not going to get high because it doesn't get metabolized through the liver.
Okay.
But what happens to your partner if you've used it on your clitoris and there's some oral sex going on?
And he needs some medicine.
Well, I guess maybe the important bit is to communicate with your partner ahead of time so he or she knows what they're getting themselves into.
Yes, you should. I'm reminded of one of the early, and this may segue into the next episode, a pharmacist we interviewed in the first season. He was talking about when people take their medicine, you should not get high.
Well, yeah. No, and he was absolutely right. That was Michael Boivin. Had a moment there, Mike Boivin. Yeah, what he was saying was, even if you were, let's say, vaping a high THC thing, if you were getting high, if you're having a lot of the psychoactive effects, basically the dose is wrong.
Right.
But now this is a slightly different thing that if you take it topically, vaginally, rectally, it doesn't go through the liver. And so one of the metabolites that makes you high after taking an edible, either you don't get any or don't get as much.
Okay. But you do get high when you ingest it in the gastrointestinal tract.
Right. So the idea behind that is everything you eat, first place it goes is the liver and then to the rest of your body.
Right.
So if it goes sort of through the skin, we'll call it topically, rectally, vaginally, it should avoid the liver altogether. Rectally, because again, I'm obsessed about suppositories. It's about one third through the liver, two thirds not.
But suppositories work through the absorption of water, the large bowel, right? That's how you get the absorption.
Well, sometimes, but remember the cannabinoids are really big, what we call fat soluble molecules. In fact, they've even, some of the reading were at one point called false cholesterol. So they are going to get absorbed directly through the lining of either the vagina or the rectum, and they're going to go literally through the fat into the blood there.
The tissues that need the medicine.
Well, yeah. They're got to get into the blood, carried around by some lipoprotein, and away we go.
Because the purpose of a suppository for someone with Crohn's is to take away the contractions, right? The cramping.
Right. So that's one of the neat things about, and this is still kind of anecdotal, but we've talked to enough people that seems to make sense, is we're basically putting the medicine where we need it.
Where you need it. So when it does get absorbed into the liver, if you got the proper amount of medicine, THC, CBD combination, you should not get high anyways, right?
Yeah, no, and that's true. But the argument is, since it's not
since Anatta's very much of it is getting through the liver, changed into one of the metabolites that makes you high, or even less chance of you getting high off of a THC suppository.
Okay, so I guess the lesson learned here is if you're taking cannabis recreationally,
don't put it up your butt.
Don't put it up your butt. Okay. Now, however, that's getting back to the sex one. You can put it in the vaginal vault,
yes.
But make sure your partner knows
yes.
so that 10, 20 minutes down the road, he doesn't realize that, oh my goodness.
He or she.
Love is high. You get high off love.
Yes. So yes, like everything else, we communicate well with your sexual partner.
It just takes a whole different point about getting high off your lover, I guess.
I guess so.
Okay. So tell me about this pharmacy.
That's great segue. Thanks.
I'm trying to get you. You're giggling like a schoolboy. Yeah. I wish I was here for that one. It was a good interview.
It was. Yeah. But you were here when I talked to Raheem Dalla.
Yes.
So Raheem, I've kind of been following him for a year now. I showed you a little pharmacy magazine where he's gracing the front cover. He's got a very cool pharmacy in Ottawa called Hybrid Farm, and they deal with cannabis.
Right.
Which kind of blew my mind when I first read about it, because I've been told by my College of Pharmacy that I can't do that.
Okay, let's review a little bit of this academically. We both belong to provincial colleges and national colleges.
I'm not. There's no national college really for pharmacy.
So there's no. Where do you get your practice insurance? Through your college, provincial, province?
Yes.
Okay. So that's where you get your practice. So they're the ones that dictate your local practice.
All my licensing is provincial. All pharmacy is regulated provincially. That being said, we all wrote a national exam when we first got out of school. But after that, there's no real national. There's pharmacy advocacy groups that are national, but no real quote unquote licensing bodies nationally.
Okay. So the national advocacy groups,
yes.
What are they saying about cannabis?
Our national advocacy group, the Canadian Pharmacists Association, is actually quite pro-cannabis.
Okay. So that's good to know.
Yes.
And in our provinces and territories, how many of them are pro?
I don't know, other than just talking to other pharmacists, it sounds like my province, Manitoba, seems to be particularly anti.
Okay. So this Raheem is in Ontario.
Right.
Okay. So let's hear his story. So what are the key points you want me to listen to?
You know, what happens to a patient when they walk in there, the sort of the kind of patients they deal with, and frankly, how pro-cannabis and pro-patient he is, like even listen for talk of the petition he started.
All right, let's hear a bit of this.
It's Reefer Madness, the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I really like your show. So again, my name is Raheem. I'm a pharmacist out here in Ottawa, and I have started Hybrid Farm, which is a cannabis specialty compounding pharmacy.
So that's interesting. So, and I think we'll get more into this later. I'm a compounding pharmacy here in Manitoba. My college has gone out of its way to say, thou shall not have any cannabis or cannabis-related products. In fact, they scared a couple of my colleagues. I've been talking to a couple of my colleagues who are actually afraid to talk to patients about cannabis because they're afraid of what the college will do even if we talk about cannabis. So how does someone in Ontario start a cannabis pharmacy and what do you guys do there?
I know, that sounds like such a shame that the college is really putting that much restriction on pharmacists able to discuss cannabis, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a medicine, right? So the way we started, I mean, we are a traditional pharmacy. We do have regular prescriptions, methadone, compounding as well, and even like a little bit of a front store with like natural over-the-counter health products. So I really wanted to dive into the medical cannabis aspect, because as we know and why your show exists, we're here in the legalizing, post-legalization world, and this is a medicine and we need to treat it as such. And I feel like as a pharmacist, we are the best suited for giving patients proper advice and education on it.
Okay, so Raheem, I'm a patient. I've just walked into Hybrid Farm. I don't know anything about cannabis, but you know, I'm getting older, so my knee hurts because I still think I'm a cyclist. And I say, you know, my knee hurts, and what can you guys do for me? I think cannabis might be something I'm interested in. What would happen when I walked into the store?
So we do have a clinic as well in here, and we do see patients on a weekly basis with our nurse practitioner. So we would help you. We would get you set up. We would get you to do an intake form as well as give us some brief medical history as well as some of the medications you may be taking currently or have taken in the past. And we would do our initial assessment and see if cannabis may be right for you. And then from there, we would advise on, you know, which products to get, how much to use. We give you a whole dosing schedule and titration schedule and just give you a full pamphlet on what to look out for, what to monitor for, and just really, you know, really treat it as any other medication.
So who's evaluating me? Is it a pharmacist? Is it the nurse practitioner? Is it someone else? Who would usually talk to a new patient?
The nurse practitioner will be the one evaluating and determining whether authorizing the prescription, whether it's right for you or not. And then myself, or I do have a couple of my colleagues here, a cannabis certified cannabis consultant, would be the one to sit down and go over, you know, strain selection, or and even to get a step further, I would sit down with the patient and give them a whole dosing schedule and titration sheet.
Good. Okay, so I've got my, well, it's sort of a prescription, but a medical document from the nurse practitioner. Does it still have to be sent off to a licensed producer and have the product be mailed back to me, or is that not that how it gets to me?
That's the realm we live in right now. In terms of medical access, is patients are subjected to ordering online through a medical or licensed producer.
Okay.
So unfortunately, we cannot dispense or even sell products at our retail storefront.
Okay. No, that's similar to how it is here. Now, you must get this question because I do all the time. Someone has walked into a recreational store, talked to a bud tender, got stuff, then they walk into my pharmacy and go, "Can I take this with my other medication?" Does that sort of fall into things that you guys deal with on a daily or weekly basis?
That probably happened half an hour ago, but yeah, that's a regular occurrence for sure. Or patients walk in and they're like, "Can I get weed here?" And because our pharmacy doesn't look like your typical pharmacy. You know, we have a mural on the wall. It looks a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more clinic style. So they think it is a dispensary. Some patients have gone even as far as to say that, "Are you a real pharmacist? What's that behind the counter there?" They look at it. I have a full-on conversation behind my counter. And then they ask at the end, is that a pharmacy with all those bottles back there?" So they're... You know, it proves that there's still very much a stigma attached to cannabis. But yeah, we would help them with dosing. They would come in with their products. We've had a bunch of patients actually come in with what they thought was legal products. And first and foremost, they were edible. And they're like, "Yeah, that's not available right now, technically speaking." So there's, you know, there's a little bit of education that needs to be involved with guiding patients.
Well, that's fascinating. Now, because you and I both compound, I want to kind of get into the compounding end of things. So I feel comfortable that I'm not spilling any personal health information because she tells us all the time and including on our podcast. So we have one of our favorite listeners slash contributors, Jackie Childs. She does lots sort of in the, we'll call it the influencer realm. And she has Crohn's disease, and she was telling us on the podcast how she's had suppositories made for her Crohn's disease, which, you know, pharmacologically makes a lot of sense. But again, and I don't know, it's different from province to province. In my province, as far as I'm aware, I can't go into my compounding lab and make her a CBD or CBD THC suppository. Can you do something like that? Or how would you help out a Crohn's patient like Jackie Childs if she was to contact you?
It's a little bit of a runaround in the sense where you have to, you know, cross all your T's, dot all your I's. The patient has to sign off as your individual person responsible. So there are a lot of loopholes you have to jump through. But in the case of, and I'm going by like the Ontario College of Pharmacy strategy and what they've been doing, and what the strategy is listed right now is saying that you're not allowed to compound recreational cannabis.
Okay.
So that this is coming from a medical side. It's coming from directly from a licensed producer. So we have tracking and traceability attached to that. And then we are able, if we are becoming the person responsible for their patient, then we are able to make it into a dosage form that is appropriate for their healthcare needs.
Okay.
So it is actually reducing harm, and it is actually preventing harm, because if someone needs a cream versus taking something orally, going topical is a lot more, you know, it's a lot safer dosing administration.
Oh, and that makes a lot of sense. But to back up a bit, so back when we had care homes, we had little people in the care home who were on cannabis, and sometimes what would happen, depending on the care home, sometimes the care homes didn't want the cannabis to be mailed into the care home to the patient. We'll dispense with why that was silly, but anyway, because it's, you know, at their home. But what would happen is in the forms that the doctor or the nurse practitioner filled out, somewhere on there, they would designate, you know, my great nephew, Alex, is my caretaker. And so then the cannabis would be mailed directly to Alex, and then Alex would physically bring it into the care home to the patient. So you're saying that somewhere in those forms, instead of saying great nephew Alex, it would say hybrid farm, and you're now sort of the caretaker of that patient?
Absolutely. And there's even some patients are getting their medication delivered to us, and that is on all LP forms, they're allowed to deliver to the healthcare practitioner. So our nurse practitioner is taking on that role of accepting cannabis-based products delivered from LPs to be able to be in the pharmacy. And that just goes well to more accessibility for patients. Some of them don't have a home. Some of them are never home. Some of them don't want it to be delivered to their house. So there's a lot of different reasons why they would want to have it delivered to the pharmacy.
Okay. And then, and again, not trying to stir up too much trouble, but just because I'm really curious again. So when you are now compounding with their cannabis product, are you a pharmacy at that point, or are you sort of the equivalent of some uncle mixing up something in their kitchen and sending it to them? Is this something that's in from your college's point of view, it's then okay for you to compound with cannabis if you're sort of designated as the caretaker of this patient?
That's how it reads by other strategies, then yes, I am. I'm not some uncle like being like, okay, let's mix this and that, but we are taking those appropriate measures, right? We're giving them an actual prescription label with a certain dosage of THC or CBD that's found in that compounded form.
That's fascinating. And again, people have heard me rant about it before, but wow, is that a lot of hoops that you have to jump through to get stuff to the patient?
I think it's just fully, it's needed right now. Like, imagine a world where we can actually take all the cannabinoids that we've discovered, like 120 of them, and start actually manipulating it to the advantage of the disease you're trying to treat. And that's where I think it should be going. And I think we should be having more rights as a pharmacy and as a medication experts to be able to handle cannabis. Because we're handling ketamine, we're handling fentanyl, we're handling opioids. Cannabis is by far a lot less severe than any of those other medications that we've been, you know, accustomed to do all over the years. I think it's just a very new concept for everybody, and everyone's kind of still sitting back scared. But I don't know. And from where I'm sitting and the practice of starting to build, we're just starting to see so much benefit effect from patients and helping them get on cannabis and giving them appropriate dosing and dosage forms. It's just fascinating.
Well, and from the medical cannabis patients I've talked to who've dealt with you, they're really happy that you're there offering that service. So I've got some actual suppository questions. Kirk thinks I have a bit of fixation, and maybe I do. So when I've been talking to some medical patients about cannabis suppositories, I've heard from more than one of them that they can't or don't get high off of THC in a suppository. In my pharmacist's mind, that doesn't make sense, but, you know, I'm not doubting what they're telling me. What have you found about, we'll call it the psychoactive effects of a THC suppository?
Well, when you're doing, so THC, obviously a psychoactive component of cannabis, when you are using this locally, so either rectally or vaginally or even topically, you are bypassing the liver. And the reason why that makes it less sense into a more active metabolite called 11-hydroxytetrahydrocannabinol. And that's what makes it that long-acting effect. That's what makes it, when you eat a brownie, for example, you're converting THC into 11-hydroxy, which gives it like a 7 to 8 hour effect, which gets you a lot more you know, stoned, so to speak. So suppository, yes, there may be some that is getting absorbed systemically, but most of it is getting absorbed locally.
Okay, so then just get my head wrapped around it, but if I smoke or vape cannabis, it's getting absorbed through my liver, sorry, through my lungs. As far as I know, that's avoiding the liver too, but I definitely get psychoactive effects. Is something different going on there?
I want to attain that to the onset of effects, because if you, when you're vaporizing or inhaling, you're going right to the bloodstream via lungs. So yeah, it will get metabolized eventually through the liver, but the onset of effects is a lot greater versus going topically or rectally or vaginally.
Oh, cool. So there,
that's my understanding.
No, that's good. I've got my pharmacology lesson of the day. That was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So you've made vaginal and rectal suppositories. You've made topicals. How about just because I like compounding, what's kind of one of the weirder types of dosage forms you've made in your compounding lab that contain cannabis?
So another one that's really cool is a lot of Crohn's, colitis, IBS patients. And when you're finding with all the oils that exist on the market, it does cause a lot of gastric upset. That's a very major common side effect is diarrhea. Some patients can't even tolerate it to the point where they're like, I'd rather not take this because I'm just going to the bathroom every 2 seconds. So there are some companies that are making a decarboxylated flower. So they take the cannabis, decarboxylate it in an oven, and grind it up to a fine powder. And we are actually encapsulating it at certain dosing ratios, and patients are having a better time, less side effects with it, and it's helping treat their Crohn's or colitis issues.
Oh, cool. So you're making a decarb ground up flower capsule. And so that way, that's really neat. I wouldn't have thought of that. And I wouldn't have thought about how the oil as a carrier might really upset someone's GI tract. So no, that's very cool.
A lot of these patients are, you know, especially if you're using high-dose CBD, where we're only restricted to oils right now, and they have to be taking a large amount of oil. And I don't know if you've ever eaten too much olive oil one night at an Italian restaurant, but yeah, you're going to find, you know, maybe get the runs, maybe get, like, a lot of acid reflux, but it's very common. And the decarb that comes from the licensed producers is already activated, so it's a lot better absorption-wise.
Cool. Kirk was just asking about insurance plans. We were talking when we were in Saskatoon about a guy who, you know, insures basically dispensaries. So we'll do a two-pronged insurance thing. Did you have to get any sort of special insurance on your shop that you wouldn't normally because you have cannabis in it? Then on the flip side, how have patients' health insurers been on paying for cannabis products?
No special insurance on my end than a regular pharmacy, because at the end of the day, that's what we are. And again, because we're not housing products, we don't actually have patients' products here. But on the patient side of things, it's been mixed reviews. Most of them are saying, no, we're not covering it. You need, you know, special authorization. You need certain ailments, such as like palliative care, cancer, seizures. So it has been a lot of loop, like jump throughs that patients have to go through in order to even get this even talked about or even covered by any means. And if they are getting covered, it's not even the full percentage of it. It's usually around either like 50 to 60% coverage if they are getting it. So it is a big, you know, another big point for patients like lacking access and lacking affordability, because I truly believe right now we are totally underdosing CBD, and it's because we can't afford it. It's so expensive, and it shouldn't be that way.
Well, Raheem, I think we could talk all day, but we have to let you get back to actually serving your patients. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, we have a petition going here at the pharmacy that has been tabled at the House of Commons, and it's to amend the Cannabis Act to allow pharmacists and pharmacies to dispense medical cannabis. And I think that's where we're going with this, and it should be going that way. And I'm very passionate about that because, again, like lack of patient accessibility. I just had a patient before I came and talked to you that is in a palliative situation, and obviously they need their medication now, but
going to the point of you have to order it online, wait for delivery. There's just a lot of aspects that are really burdening patients right now, and that's where we're trying to change it. We're trying to help patients out here at Hybrid Farm, and we're trying to do our best for what we have. So I appreciate taking the time for listening to us. And if anyone's in Ottawa, by all means, stop by the farm and come and sign our petition, because we would love to get your signature and your support.
We will. Yeah. So anyone in Ottawa, go visit Raheem and sign the petition. So Raheem, that was fantastic. Thank you very much for taking the time. And we hope we'll keep in contact with you, because there seems to be lots of interesting stuff going on there.
Absolutely.
All right. So Trevor, explain a little bit here for me. I was trying to follow the conversation. I was also trying to read the pharmacy article that is in there as well. The process. If I live in his community and I am a medicinal user of cannabis, I can have my LP send my cannabis to him.
Yes. And you can do that anywhere. And the idea, the example I
could
use.
Could you do that here in Dauphin?
I don't, without getting in trouble with my college, I don't know. But let's ignore the fact I'm a pharmacist for a second. Let's just say I have an uncle who gets medicinal cannabis.
Okay.
So my uncle, Frank, needs medicinal cannabis. And so if Uncle Frank doesn't want it to ship to his house, or maybe Uncle Frank is a long distance trucker, so he's never at home, or Uncle Frank is homeless, there was a provision built in from the beginning that whoever writes the prescription, nurse, practitioner, doctor, whoever, can specify somewhere else for the medication to go.
Okay.
And so if Uncle Frank wants it to be delivered to my place, that's in there.
To your pharmacy.
Well, no, at this point, I'm not a pharmacist. Just,
you know, I'm talking about Raheem's business.
Raheem's business, they specify that the patient's cannabis goes to his pharmacy, that he's sort of the caretaker.
He becomes the caretaker. Now, he then talks to these people as a caregiver and a consultant.
Yep.
And a nurse practitioner. And they decide, I want this particular brand or cultivar of cannabis made into suppositories. So he now takes that with I'm assuming, consensual agreement with the patient and creates the compound.
Right.
And then he gives that compound to them like he would a prescription.
Yes.
So
can I do that in Dauphin?
Yeah.
I don't know. To be honest,
what's stopping you from trying? Well, no. A job. Yeah. Well,
it's an excellent question. And again, one of the many reasons I'd love to have the head of my college on here. I don't know why it makes sense to me. It sounds like something that
let's
would help
start
patients.
Let's start our own petition. Every pharmacist that listens to this podcast, write your registrar and ask them why cannabis isn't
in pharmacies.
In pharmacies.
Because it sounds like Raheem is helping a lot of people. And I think more people could be helped if they could get information and or cannabis at their local pharmacy.
It's a good story. I think in 2 years' time, we'll be doing it too.
I hope so.
Yeah. So, this is an unsponsored episode.
So yeah, if you like what you hear, we have some really, really canna-positive listeners who like spending money on products and services. You should sponsor this podcast.
You want to have your product sold, bring it to the nurse and the pharmacist.
Absolutely. So Kirk, did you bring us some music today?
No. No.
Renee, please help us out here. What have you got?
Okay, well, I've got Ryan Cowan. Ryan Cowan is from Roblin, Manitoba, just down the road from Dauphin, Manitoba, where we produce this show. And so how about a song called Guilty as Charged by Ryan Cowan? And now all you have to do is say goodbye.
Those are good interviews.
Yeah, thanks, Kirk. It was another good one.
It was another good one.
Everyone come back.
We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermad.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next.
I don't know where I'm going, man, but I sure know where I've been. Born and raised by the grace of God and my family and my friends. Nobody's gonna change my ways, gonna turn my point of view. Judge me if you will, I won't be taking any bull from you. Call me a redneck, say I'm a roughneck, another country bumpkin. Call me a hayseed, I bought a Harley. you believe in that a man should keep his word. And I don't want no handouts, not a dime I didn't earn. They're gonna have to lock me up and throw away the key before I let you come and take away.
I was good during the interview. I was very professional. I had a little bit of trouble during our intro. Sorry, Kylie. I have trouble keeping the straight face talking about sex. All right. Okay. It's a good one. You should come back.
Okay. Kylie Boudreau?
Yes.
Or Beaudry?
Oh, crap. Beaudry. Not so. All right.
Let's dig in.